County?
No, Valley County.
I went out there to teach. My uncle and his family lived out there, and I was going to teacher school in Dillon, normal school. And I came home for Christmas vacation, and they weren't able to get a teacher because there's no place for her to board. Well, my uncle had, he didn't have nine. They wound up with two that his wife had, and nine altogether. And my grandmother all lived together in a log house, not a partition in it, just wires with curtains on. So he talked me into coming out there to teach, and that's where I started my 30 years of teaching. That's where I started out there.
We started out as motherless children, six of us, on a farm up here between Glasgow and Nashua on the old Teddy Roosevelt Highway. And we managed to get through school, and she went her way. She ended up in the convent in...
No. I never was in a convent.
Well, I thought that's where you took your last years. What was it?
It was a girl's school. I mean, it was Academy, St. Vincent's Academy in Helen. What do they call it? Just a girl's school.
Bring up here. Bring that chair up here.
I had to do my own way in there. I could work for my board and room in a very, very dignified. Oh, and I'll have to tell this. My dad was so proud of me. He raised us. And when we got there, why? I can't imagine how I could tell you, but we were very inexperienced in everything, and I was an awful good girl. And I got the lady like conduct medal for the, about, what was it, 120 girls? And my dad was so proud. You can imagine, it had my name engraved. It was a leaf, and it's very fine gold, and he kept, you know, I always said I felt like a bull with the fair, you know, with a red ribbon on. And I took that thing and folded it all up and threw it away because he kept it.
Now, don't you wish you had it?
Yes. Wouldn't my kids really like that? Okay, I'm all through now.
So your dad never remarried while you were growing up?
Yes, a couple of times.
But the first stepmother only, I think, less than 2 years, and the other one was younger than I after I was married. They got married. Our three kids, my three kids and my dad and my half-brothers and sisters are almost exactly the same age. But then they lived together until we died.
And then my dad was kind of strict with us.
Oh, yeah.
If we say gee or gosh at the table, we got sent away from the table. So I started running around with my first husband, and he was the only one my dad ever forbid me to go with, and then wound up marrying him.
Why didn't he like him?
He thought he was part Indian.
Do you think that's why?
No, it was because Tom was...
He was high school... McPhersons were very big people in Nashua. They weren't wealthy as we would think of it, but they were business people, and they were...
I don't know why my dad didn't want me to marry him.
Well,
I went with others lots worse than he was.
Maybe, but maybe he didn't know.
But anyway, Tom and I were married and went out to the ranch across, that's over in Macon County.
Was that a ranch he owned? Excuse me, that he owned? Or did you buy the ranch together?
No, we went over and lived on his dad's ranch. And then later, that's where Macon City started. And the beer man, we started a bar. And during the dam. No, we didn't buy it till we left.
Oh.
And then we came back, and Tom kept saying, when we were in Detroit, he kept saying, let's go back and buy the ranch. That was after the Macon. There were 3,600 people in Macon County, in Macon City. The beer man came out, and he said, if you'll name it Hams, we'll give you, I don't know, 10 cases of beer or something like that.
Name the city Hams?
Yeah.
That would have been a good promotion.
But it was all Macon City people. A lot of them were from Macon County, so we called it Macon City. And started the bar. And
is this on tape?
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
But anyway, we stayed there. We were there during when the slide came, And people went up the hill trying to get to high ground. This man came down. He was just slobbering to snooze juice. And he said, the dam's going out. Get up on the hill. Get to higher ground. And he went all through Macon City saying that. Well, there were people going up the hill there. You know, it was a shack town. And there were people going up, and there was still smoke coming out of their chimneys. And I came running to the school, and I grabbed a purse, and I had an apron on, and ran down to get my older son from school and get him to get to higher ground. And Tom's mother and dad were there. They were sitting out in the shade of the house, and we tried to get them. No, if it comes, we'll just go up on the hill, and they wouldn't leave. But we all went, we even didn't go toward the dam. We went out across the hills to try to beat the water if it was coming rushing down the low part. But Macon City was vacated pretty fast then, but the dam didn't do any damage down there.
Well, tell me to go back a little bit, when you were talking about the surveyors.
I was great big with Ronnie. And when they came, it was dinner time, snow on the ground, and it was cold. And so we asked them to stay for dinner. And Tom went out someplace. Well, I was so huge that I didn't go down in the basement after potatoes to cook for him. So one of the guys went down the ladder. It was just a ladder going down into the cellar. So he went down and got a big pan of potatoes, and I suppose we gave him venison to eat for meat. But I had forgotten how many were there, 3 or 4 or 5 or however many surveyors there were. That was the start of the dam as far as we were concerned. We didn't think we'd ever live long enough to see it completed, but or did it ever go through or something, I don't know. It seemed like an awful big project.
Did you know any of the ranchers who lost their land?
Yeah. Slim Finley and George Nichols. And how many more up the dry were there, John?
Oh, there were lots of pointers up there.
Yeah. Well, that was up on Ninth Point, wasn't it? They lost theirs.
It was in the...
Yeah, it was in, went in the lake.
Yeah.
That's the
Francis's lost theirs. Dave Francis.
Yeah, on this side of the river.
Yeah.
They weren't on the other side. We were across the Missouri River in Macon County. These others that I talked about,
yeah.
Nichols and Slim Finley, he was an old cowboy. And they came from Chicago, Slim and Mrs. Finley.
What did they think about that?
They thought it was an awful big project for this little place that where we were living. We were pretty isolated. There was no way to get across the river except by private boat. We had our own boat, and that was a rowboat. It wasn't a motorboat like we think of now. Or else if we were going to drive in the wintertime, well, we just drive the team of horses across on the ice. Or else you could, if you wanted to go, you by horse and buggy or however, you had to go up the to the dry, cross the dry, and go to the Lismas Ferry, and then come across to Glasgow. Did you ever do that?
No, of course, we lived on this side. So.
We did in the winter. I remember taking the cutter. It was all enclosed with a team of horses, and we went up by Lismas. But as a rule, we just went right down the river and went to Nashua on the ice. We drove the horses on the ice and went down.
Well, do you think the ranchers felt they got a fair price from the government for their land?
In some cases, yes. And in other cases, no. There was one bachelor down there, Louis Myers, and he wouldn't sell for that price. So they condemned it, and he got less than if he'd have taken. We didn't sell any. We were farming Slim Finley's land at the time. We had a beautiful oat crop, and we never got a cent for it. we were just young kids and we didn't know anything about it. They took it, so they got it. They took it. We never got a cent for our oat crop, didn't get to harvest it or anything. But Tom got a job on the dam, 50 cents an hour. That's where they were cutting trees.
Over in Garfield County, they were just hoping and praying that the water would come up. We had homesteaded over there, and everybody around there was hoping that the dam water would, their place would be condemned and they would buy it, because it wasn't worth. We sold ours for $5 an acre, and we were wishing that the government would take it and take it off our hands over there. No one wanted. They all wanted the water to rush in.
I think that was pretty hard times. That's when a dollar was worth a dollar, but you didn't see too many of them, more like quarters.
Nickel was worth a nickel.
We saved, during the dam, at 50 cents an hour, we saved pennies, nickels, and dimes, nothing as big as a quarter, and we saved $130 and sent it to Tom's brother in Minot, and he brought down I appreciated that car more than any car we've ever had.
What kind of a car was it?
It was a little Chevy, and it had these, a coupe, and it had these little side curtains on the side. I tell you, I thought I was really had it made. I was pretty proud of that car. But.
So did you stay on the ranch, and then Tom went to work on the dam?
Mm-hmm. We lived there, and I think he rode horseback. That's when they were clearing the trees out where the dam was going to be. They were cutting the trees, 50 cents an hour. I think you better push the button for this one. Or went to work.
The surveyors came out there. I mean, we had, I didn't see them.
When was that the surveyors came, John? When they started, surveying. When they first started surveying for the dam.
I don't know, but 33? They started the clearing of the brush and stuff in the fall of 33. The surveyors had to have been there before because they had all that done, you know. So I don't know when it was.
Well, they had done the surveying when they came. They'd been out in the hills and they'd done the surveying when they stopped by for dinner.
I wasn't here anyway, but they didn't do any surveying around the folks' place.
Oh, uh-huh.
You know.
Well, that was... We started a bar over there, and I'll tell you, that was the wildest thing. We didn't have any law enforcement at all, no jail, nothing, and you got everything. You got from preachers to scum, and it was a lawless place. And then we finally got a man from Orrin Miller came over, and he was the first deputy, and they built a little what went for a jail, but most of them they took to Fort Peck or to Glasgow or someplace. We didn't have much of Art Boyum was a deputy sheriff there too at one time after Orrin started, but he said, "You're selling liquor. How can you expect them not to get drunk and, you know, let their hair down?" So he was pretty lenient. He was a pretty nice guy.
Tell her about the home that burned and the two little kids that burned.
You mean our log house over there?
No.
Oh, up along the.
Yeah. That was such a horrible thing.
I don't remember it. I know they had a fire, but I didn't know.
The mother went over to the bar and left the two children.
No, I think she went to the meat market. It was right across. She left the little kids.
It was late at night, wasn't it?
Well, the meat market, Star's Meat Market, was there.
Oh, okay.
And she had gone across the road for something, left the kids sleeping, but she locked the door for some reason so they wouldn't wake up and get out or something, and the house caught a fire. I don't even remember the name now.
Oh, and a very good friend of theirs and ours, too, they went in and got knew where the crib was and pulled the kids out, and I know Dick Miller pulled them out and said he could smell burned flesh on his hands for days after. He said it was the most awful thing that
there was quite a little town over there. To start with, there was a cafe, Pulaski's store and Gidley's store and Star's Meat Market and Friedel's Menswear and a theater and a Smith's Grocery Store and then the Macon City Bar.
Well, how did it, when you say you started Macon City, how did that work? Was it on your land?
It was on Tom's folks' land. But we started it. Tom had worked up at the dam, and he knew a lot of people from Macon County. Well, they wanted to live there, so he gave free lots to certain ones of these. I think three or four: Art Boehm and the Johnson family, and somebody else I can't remember. And then different ones, they'd come and I'd go down and collect rent, $2 a lot for the rent. And then I split that with Tom's mother and his folks. And every time we'd go down, you know, they'd just come and they'd set up a tent or something in the shade of a tree and you'd go down and you'd collect. We did have a town pump. We drilled a well down there, and, of course, they carried the water from that town pump. But it wasn't laid out in any town at all. It was just you'd go down and you'd find a shack here behind this tree and another one there. And it was a kind of a helter-skelter place.
Didn't someone raise pigs down there and come over here and get the...
That was down in the Fraction. We called it the Fraction down. Mm-hmm. It was a fraction of an acre is what it was, but we just called it the Fraction. There were people who'd get drunk, men would get drunk, and they'd come to the house. Tom was pretty good-natured, and they'd want to borrow money, you know. Well, borrow till payday. Well, Tom would give him some money, and this guy had borrowed money before, and he came. It was late at night, probably 10 o'clock, and I thought, boy, if he's coming again. And I picked up this iron skillet, and I went to the door, and it wasn't even him at all. Another time, there was a barber. They had a barber shop uptown, which was in Fort Peck or Macon City, and he came down. And he wanted to buy chickens. Well, of course, I had raised chickens there. I said, "They aren't for sale. We just have them for the eggs and for our own use." And he said, "You got enough of them." He took off his coat and he was gonna go and catch him a chicken. And I had a hired girl then to watch the kids and. I said, "Jenny, bring me the shotgun." So she brought the gun, and I didn't shoot at him, thank God. I didn't know that the thing was loaded. And I just pulled up, and I thought he'd stop, and he was running chickens, and I just pulled up, and the thing was loaded, and I shot up over the hill. He didn't even stop for his coat. He went up to the bar, and he said, "Tom, your wife is crazy." Real happy I hadn't shot at him. Oh, we had some funny things going on there. The Addison Miller Company, I guess, they had a contract there, and they had a whole bunch of buildings for their crew that they charged rent for. They had a whole line of them, I don't know how many, maybe a dozen. And I don't know how we acquired them, but anyway, we got that. We didn't have electricity or anything for a long time, and then we had a generator, made a light plant. And our hired man decided that there's something wrong. We didn't have lights, so he went out the side of the house, and he wired these two wires together. He thought that would make lights for us. Instead of that, it blew every light in Macon City. When Tom came home, he couldn't imagine how come everything didn't work. But I don't know what he'd done, but he said, well, all he did was wire those two. He thought it had burned into two, and he wired two together, but evidently it wasn't the right two. So we were in darkness.
Well, did you charge more rent to, businesses, like to the meat market?
I kind of think we charged... more for a business, maybe $5 or $10. I don't remember now, but I know the houses, it was $2 a month. And they'd say, well, I'll pay you on payday. Well, they didn't come, so we'd have to go down and get it again. And so I had to collect every 2 weeks, every payday, I had to go and get it. We had a, I don't know how to say this. Anyway, we always called her the Little Red Hen. She had a place up on the hill. I guess you all know what kind of a place it was, but it was quite popular. But she was the nicest lady. She was cute as a dickens. And my brother, I think he met her at a dance over at the spot then. It's Gateway now. But he met her at the spot, and boy, they danced and danced. He had no idea. She'd never speak to me if I'd see her in town or anything. But Bud didn't know, my brother didn't know that she was the Little Red Hen. And he was surprised when he found out after the after he'd had quite a thing going with her that night, you know, dancing and having a big time, and finally found out she was a Little Red Hen from up on the hill.
But the guys that didn't know her was thought, well, Bud's got something going here.
Yeah. It was a... We had a lot of nice people there, and like I say, we had all classes. Some of them you'd bet they were married, and they weren't, and some of them you'd know they weren't married, but they were. They had kids and everything. We had a school. Hannah Boyum taught, and...
Desi Roberts?
Well, that was after the dam that Desi taught there.
Oh, was it?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Hannah Boyum and somebody by the name of Mrs. Allman and Mrs. Harmon were teachers there. And that's where Mike, well, not Ron, not Jerry, but Ronnie went to school there.
So was it mostly families from Macomb County?
They came from all over, but most of them, I would say, was probably Macomb County people.
With 3,000 people, though, there weren't that many people in Macomb County.
No,
that
but it was a work project, so they came. They had to be eligible, though, to get a job. They had to be needy people to get a job, and I think everybody I knew was needy at that time.
What about the businesses? Were those local people that set up the businesses?
Well, now Friedel's Men's Store, that was local. The drugstore, that was Chapin, wasn't that his name? The druggist in Circle?
Mm-hmm.
And Pulowski, he had a grocery store. And Gidley had a grocery store, and Smith had a grocery store. But I think Pulowski was, I don't think Bill Smith, I don't know where he came from. But it was a busy time for everybody. One woman, it was mud, it's gumbo, and she was mad because there was mud all the time. When they left, he lost his job. She says, when I get to the North Dakota border, I'm going to wash the car. I don't want any Montana memories at all.
Really?
She was really, really didn't like Montana, but they made enough money. That's what I generally tell them, though. If they gripe about it, I'd say, you don't have to stay. You came here because you needed a job. You don't have to stay if you don't want to. But there were so many boom towns all around. Have you talked to anybody that had other boom towns on there?
Well, I've talked to a few people who lived in Wheeler.
That was, you know, that was named after Burton K. Wheeler, of course.
Yeah, yeah, uh-huh.
But... we finally, when the Tom was learned the welding trade, and golly, I think he was making $1.35 an hour. Holy smokes, that was big money. Then he got to be a welding inspector. And then when it kind of went downhill, well, we went to Detroit, Michigan, and he got a job as a welder there. And then he kept saying, oh, let's go back. Let's go home. Let's go back home. And he said, let's rent the ranch and go back home. I said, nope. And he kept saying, let's rent it. One day he said, well, let's buy it. And I said, okay, let's go. So we did. We came back and bought the ranch and the cattle. I think we paid, $1,500 for the cattle. But you sold them then for how much was it? We got $10 a head when it was for big steers.
What year was this that you came back?
Oh, Ronnie was probably in the
46,
was it?
No.
When we came back from yeah. Michigan?
You're talking about...
Oh, no, when you came back
Tennessee.
From Tennessee.
Yeah.
Oh, that's what I was going to say, when we came back from Tennessee. But we bought the ranch when we came back from Michigan.
Yeah. What grade was Ronnie in?
I think Ronnie was probably in the second grade when we came back. And that would be... He was born in 1929, and that would be 7 years.
1937.
Oh, it was more than that. The dam was over when we came back. We flipped a coin, two other families, and we were going to Michigan. We all got all packed and flipped a coin. One wanted to go to Michigan, and the other one wanted to go to Washington.
Probably about 1940, because that's when the dam kind of finished up.
Yeah. Well, that must have been. I was trying to go, you know. Trying to go, well, what grade Ronnie was in. Jerry hadn't started school yet when Jerry, the only son I have now, Ronnie was killed in 1929 in a car accident. 1934. Oh, I'm all mixed up. He was killed when he was 29 years old. And my other son has, he and his wife has El Cordell Lanes out in Glasgow. I'm all mixed up on dates.
Mm-hmm. Well, how long after the boomtown, after Macon City started, did you start the bar? Was that right at the beginning?
That was pretty close. We started it. We had two log houses, one setting north and south, and one setting east and west. And we started the bar in the log house, just bottled beer. That's all there was. We had ice. We had put up ice and had sold bottled beer there. And then we built this big bar up there, bar and dance hall, which is now being used for a granary over at our old ranch over there. When we started that real shortly after the after Fort Peck or the dam started.
435. You had the bar before 1935.
Jerry was a baby when we still had the... And he was born in 34. He was a baby when...
When Shirley was born, you had the bar, and she was born in 35.
Yeah. Well, did we have the bar uptown, or did we have the...
That I couldn't say. We didn't get over there.
We didn't have it there by the house very, very often, because everybody got friendly when they got to drinking, and... I was out there serving beer, and Jerry was asleep, and here when the drunk came out with, he said he heard the baby crying, and here he came with Jerry out of the one house.
Well, the two houses were close together, wasn't it?
Well, yeah, one was this way, and one was right here this way, about 6 feet apart.
So did you work in the bar?
Yeah. My mother-in-law and I tended bar when the bartender went, you know, went down for meals, went to home for lunch. Remember one time somebody was getting obnoxious up there, and Muzzy, we called Tom's mother, was Muzzy to everybody in Nashua and Fort Peck, and he kept pestering me, have a drink. And so she just took this old wet bar towel, and she wound it up, and she smacked him over the head. And he left.
Did it knock him out?
No, he got the message.
Well, did you ever have to try to break up any arguments?
Tom was the bouncer at two, and he'd come home about four times a week with his shirt torn off, and it was pretty wild before we had any law over there. My brother happened to be up there one time, and Tom's dad was there too, and he was an easygoing old Texan, and he'd try to make everything quiet, and this guy, I don't know what he'd done, but anyways, my brother came down after me, Bud came down after me, and I went up there, and I was sitting trying to see what was going on, and I had tipped the chair back against the wall, and this drunk came up and took the front deal and knocked me off. It kind of broke things up for a while, and there were people going out both doors, the front and the back door. But boy, there was a lot of torn clothes and everything else. It was a preacher's daughter married to this guy that pulled the chair out from under me. And another time, I happened to walk into the bar, and my husband was sitting there, and this woman had on a long slinky, looked like pajamas to me, and there was two other men there sitting in that booth. And when I came in, I guess she thought that I looked kind of mean or something, and she says, "What do you do for excitement around here?" And I said, "Old girl, you're just as close to excitement as you'll ever get." And she laughed. I don't know where, I never saw her before or after.
What about the time when Tom was fighting and you thought he was going to choke the guy?
Oh, that was funny. This guy had gotten, he had rented the bar.
Oh.
Verstegen had rented the bar, and somehow he got in jail. I don't know what he'd done, but anyway, he'd called and asked me if we'd go his bond, if Tom would go his bond, and I said no. I didn't even tell Tom that he wanted us to go the bond. And so when that one night, it was ice all over everything. And they were outside fighting. Yeah, this Verstegen and Tom didn't know what he was fighting about, what he hit him or anything. And they were hitting at each other and knocking each other down or slipping and falling. It was all over. I had a fifth of whiskey. I don't know what in the world I was doing to that. And I was just ready. I was going to get old Verstegen when he stood up, and I had it over my shoulder, and the barber just took it out of my hand behind him. I guess he kept me from committing murder or something. But Tom didn't know anything about it. They were friends afterwards. I told him that I didn't tell Tom. We just weren't going to go his bond, but he was going to whip Tom for it.
How did the fight stop? Did they just quit?
I suppose they just fought till they couldn't have slipped and fallen. You know, they didn't have to hit each other. They were sliding all over on the ice.
Somebody choking Tom?
Well, that wasn't during the dam.
Oh, okay.
That was before the dam. That's just shortly after we were married. But that doesn't have anything to do with the dam.
Well, so at first you started selling beer. Where would you get the beer from? Were there beer distributors?
Oh, yeah, they'd come out and haul out the beer. We had tap beer after we got up in the bar. We had tap beer in the basement. Not in the basement, but the kegs were in the basement, and we, you know, dispensed it like they, you know, from the bar. Boy, I've seen that bar three and four deep trying to get it to get beer. We just had a beer license. We didn't have hard liquor at all.
What did the tap beer cost? What did you sell it for per glass?
Yeah, we had the mugs. Before we went up there, we bought it for we sold it for just twice as much as we bought it for before we went up, just the bottle beer. I don't remember, probably 2 bits a bottle we bought it for and probably sold it for 50 cents a bottle. I don't know. But anyway, it was just half. We bought it for just half of what we sold it for.
Well, at Wheeler, they had, you know, 10 cents a glass for beer.
Well, that's probably what we had, too. That was not a glass, that was a mug. Didn't everybody have mugs then?
They had glasses up there.
Oh, we had mugs. They made good
shine.
Good numbing clubs.
So you also built a dance hall.
Yeah, it was a big, it was kind of in an L, like this, and then the dance hall was back here on the back half of the bar. I don't know.
For music.
Oh, we had music. They'd come out from town and had taxi dancers, 10 cents a dance.
Now, how did they do? Did you hire the taxi dancers? How did they go to work?
They'd buy tickets. The guys would buy tickets to dance with them, 10 cents a piece, and then they'd give them a ticket till they were out and then buy some more.
Uh-huh. And who did you decide which taxi dancers could work in your bar, or did they just come in and work on their own?
Maybe they were married women for all I know. They probably weren't.
What did they get out of it?
10 cents a dance. We didn't get anything out of it.
You didn't get anything out of that?
We just provided the wherewithal to make them want to dance, I guess.
Yeah.
And you paid
the music? Sure. We paid the music.
And you didn't charge for them to dance. You sold enough beer
Sold beer.
Well, somebody told me that in Wheeler, after they had the tickets, that then they passed a law or something, but they no longer had the tickets for the taxi dancers, but then the men would have to buy the taxi dancer a drink.
I don't know anything about that. All I know about Wheeler is that Ruby said, if there isn't a fight every 5 minutes, the drinks are on her, or something like that.
Well, that's true. They used to do that, but then you see they didn't have the ticket, but then they, you know.
Just give them a dime?
Just give them a dime, sure.
I don't think the house got any of that taxi dancer money. I know we never did. Just
10 cents a dance, you dance all night, and you wouldn't have any of a buck in your pocket anyway when you got done.
Well, they drank while they were doing it, and we made our money on the drinks and paid the music.
Girl, how would they?
They'd get the dime.
Yeah, but 10 cents a dance.
Well, the dances probably weren't that long.
They probably made more money than we did for wages.
That's probably right.
if the song was just a couple minutes.
Yeah, you know, yeah. If they didn't play too long of the dance. I suppose the dances were quite short.
Yeah. Yeah, I suppose. Yeah.
Did you have a jukebox or live music?
Live music. We didn't have any 6-piece orchestra or anything like that. It was probably.
But you had the old piano.
Piano. It had a piano player and banjo or guitar or something. I don't even remember what we had. The piano was one that I was supposed to take lessons on when my mother was killed. Our mother was killed by horses. But that was a long time before the dam started.
So that was your family piano?
Mm-hmm.
It was piano that you put in the
bar? There was beer stains, you know, where the piano player would be. It was generally a man piano player, and he'd have everybody want to buy the music a drink, and he'd set it up on the piano. There were rings all over where the beer had been set on the piano, or somebody dancing and set their beer up on top of the piano.
Was it, did you always have the same piano player?
No. I don't even know how we got him. I suppose Tom took care of that, or the bartender, whoever we had tending bar.
there's a lot of more people thumping pianos than that than there is now. You'd have an awful time finding anybody now. There's
well, you couldn't musicians. You couldn't afford to have them now because no. they cost a lot more money then now than it did then.
Was there a lot of turnover of like people who were bartenders or the taxi dancers and the musicians?
We had a couple of bartenders, and it was kind of funny. We'd always this one would always be counting the money whenever I'd go up there in the mornings to see how things were going. Walt was always counting the money, and we thought, well, what in the world is he always doing that for? And then the other bartender and his wife had a big fight, and she came up to our house, and she said, Lila, Fred stole enough money to, that's what we used, the money he stole to buy that new car. And so we found out it was the other one. It wasn't the one that was counting the money. It was the other one that was stealing the money.
And his own wife told on him? What did you do?
Well, I remember I fired the one. He and Tom had gone, and the deputy sheriff, Art Boyham, had gone across the river, come over on this side of the river on a party. And I went up there the next morning, and I saw Tom's shoes sitting out in front of the bar. And I went in, and, of course, he was. We had a couch in the back, and he was there. And here Walt was. He had on a fur jacket, and he hadn't gone to bed yet. And he was supposed to be tending bar, and I just raised Cain with him. I said, what in the world do you think we had you out here for, but kind of take care of things? He said, I thought I was in good company with my boss and the deputy sheriff. And I said, well, you've had it. He was pretty drunk then, and I took him to the door, and I kicked him outside and went and got his clothes. I told him, you're through. We paid him off, and I said, you're through, and I went down and got his clothes and took him to town. He says, what do you think I am, a common, ordinary hay hand that you can fire and take my clothes to town? But that, he says, someday I'm going to show you the scar you left. Is that on?
Uh-huh.
You can cut that out.
Friends now.
We're good friends. He lived up at Scobie and got a family all grown. And, but
the taxi dancers, weren't they just a lot of just common people?
Sure.
Nice young,
just,
you know.
Money was worth, a dime was worth a dime.
The lady was here yesterday.
Was a taxi dancer?
Don't mention any
Who
names.
Was here yesterday?
In the motor home.
Oh, that's right. I forgot.
Yeah.
Don't mention any names because you'll probably interview them too.
I started that conversation. That's okay. You don't have to say any names on tape. You can tell me later.
We better not because you'll probably interview
no.
them.
I don't think we. There were a lot of them that they didn't have a boyfriend, so they'd go in and. And they would just dance with them.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
She's the only one that I ever knew, but then I had heard of other girls that were high school girls that would come in for the evening up there. I never did see them. We had a dime to pay the taxi.
I'll have to tell you a very interesting...
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
This would be funny, because it was a man and his wife, and he worked on a drag line up at night. He didn't get home till midnight. They worked the, and so she'd come to the dances and just have a heck of a time till just before he came home from work. And he'd stop in at the bar. He just came down over the hill and there was the bar, and so he'd stop and have a drink. Oh, go get your wife, because she'd rush home and go to bed. And so he'd think it was a good idea. So he'd go home and get his wife up and then come back to the dance.
Well, that blonde Jewel that I had take care of the kids, we worked and we had to have a babysitter. And she was a good enough person. And she had to dance.
Well, I suppose maybe they needed the money, but Pearl was out to have a good time. She was a she was a party gal.
Mm-hmm.
So she'd get up and come back, and everybody knew it. My mother-in-law, Muzzy, he was fighting with her one time, and she was scared he was going to kill her, so she came back, and Muzzy put her in the back bedroom and hid the car in the garage, and he went looking for her, and boy, we told her not to ever do that again, because he had shot through other people's houses, thinking his wife was in there. He didn't kill anybody, but she was a rip terror.
Some pretty wild women of the West, huh?
Yes. Some of them were. Now we're old and gray and...
Well, it sounds like you had as much to do with running the bar as Tom did.
Yeah, we did, because he was up, he'd take the night shift. And then he was sleeping, then I'd have to go, Muzzy and I would go up and get it, open it and get it ready when the bartender came.
So when did it open and close?
We tried to close it a lot sooner than we ever got it closed. Lock one door and they'd come in the front, and somebody would unlock the back door and they'd come in the back, and it was just, there were... After one big setu there were crowbars and everything else laying around fighting.
Nobody ever got killed or badly hurt, huh? Had to well, hospitalized or anything?
No. One guy got his ear chewed off. Jack somebody, I don't know who that was. Another fracas up here at Wheeler, they had... you know, just had a fight, and one guy knocked him down and hit the rail around and broke his neck. And Tom had to be a witness for that, a character witness for that. We knew the guy pretty well. But it was wild.
Well, what made you decide to give it up and leave?
Had enough. We rented it out to that... Lawson Howard. He was the barber at the time. He'd always wear great big bib overalls. And he said if anybody got those overalls, they'd have more money. I think he must have kept his money in his pocket, because they all kidded him about those overalls. He always wore them. And he made money there. But we were glad to get out of it.
Did you, was there ever a problem because you were making money there, and if they found out that you were making money there, would Tom have been still able to keep his job on the dam?
Well, he didn't work on the dam after he went back to work. After we bought the place, he went back to work for whoever built the powerhouse here. What was that? He was inspector up there then. He was a very good welder. He welded that static oil static line or whatever it was, and he didn't want to go to work. But when he went up to take the test, when they wanted him to go back to work again on that oil static line, he dug out his leather and stuff and helmet from up in the top of the garage. This guy that gave him the test, he was telling one of the other guys up there, Mick Trotter, and he said, this old son of a gun came up there, he said, I knew he just wanted the $7 that they would make for taking the test. He said there was bird manure or chicken manure all over his leather and the old helmet that he had, and he said he made the best test that he ever was. And Mick got the biggest kick out of telling Tom that. This guy said he just knew that he couldn't make it, but he needed the $7 because he's But he did go back to work after we bought the ranch for a while.
But once you started the bar and stuff, he didn't stay working on the dam in those early days?
Well, yeah, he stayed there. He ran the bar, so he must not have worked on the dam then, after that.
kind of too rough, or
yeah, hard. He worked 4 to, well, they had shift work, you know, 8 to 4 and 4 to 12 and 12 to 8 or something. Anyway, they worked around the clock and they had to work shift work. But I don't remember when he went back to work for Chicago Bridge and Iron as a welder and then an inspector on the second powerhouse. That was, I don't even know when that was built. John was a, I didn't know him then. I suppose he was a young pistol. He was an oiler on the, or something. It had something to do with the cats and stuff.
Yeah.
Caterpillar tractor.
Oh, when they first started in fall of 33.
Uh-huh. Were you involved in clearing the land?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They gave us an axe, and, well, we were supposed to check it out. They gave us an axe, and we'd go out every day and clear brush and stuff. Yeah, it, later on then, when they got started cutting some of the large trees, that'd be down in Kiwanis Park. That whole area was just solid with brush and big trees. It had never been cleared. And they wanted that all cleared. So later on then we got a job of sawing up the tree
away.
And my folks had a little 1020 International tractor. And I took that down there. And I borrowed a buzzsaw from another neighbor. So I took those down there. And I got 50 cents an hour for myself. I got 50 cents an hour for the tractor. I got 2 bits an hour for the saw. And they furnished the gasoline, and I had to furnish the oil.
Buzzing wood, 2 bits an hour for the saw.
Well, I've heard that they really tried to use a lot of, like, axes instead of buzz saws and hand tools so that they would make more jobs.
Well, that was the idea, make a lot of jobs, I guess, yeah.
Uh-huh.
But then we sawed all that wood, and then they hauled it down down around where the floodplain garage is, and they had it all stacked up there. They had it all ricked up. And when we got through with the with that wood, I went to work for a while in a tool house. They had one tool house at the time. I knew the guy that was running it. It was a fellow from Glasgow that they had running it. And the interesting part of that tool house business was that when we first took over, they hadn't had much of a system. When they first started with these axes and stuff, there wasn't enough axes in the country. So they gave people requisition books to go out and buy axes, and they bought them in Wolf Point Circle and Malda and everywhere, all over the country. And someone kind of forgot to keep track of all of this, and of course the people got paid for their axes.
2288662.
They didn't have a tool house to check these things out, and everybody got an axe, and we didn't have any axes in the tool house to speak of. You were supposed to check them out and then check them back in. Well, they didn't check them out, so they didn't check them back in. And we were short, when I first went to work in the tool house with Neil Campbell, he was from Glasgow. Oh, I think we were short several hundred axes. And of course, we were responsible. Neil was, anyway. So, I'd gather together a bunch of these old axes, and we'd, I forget what the process was. No, you'd forget what they called it. But you'd have someone come down, you know, from the ad building, and they'd check those axes, and so they'd take them off of your list. And then you were supposed to haul those axes to the dump. I don't know whether you want this on tape or not, but that's the way they worked it. I mean, I'd put those axes back somewhere, and the next month I'd run them through again. We finally caught up.
Well, where did they take all the... Did they burn off the brush?
They burned the brush, yes. Uh-huh. But the trees that were large enough to cut for wood, we sawed them up for wood in stove wood lengths. And later on then, when they were working on the field and stuff, well, they had these little shacks, and they'd have just out, maybe out in the open, they'd have a stove, probably two barrels, one welded on top of the other one with a little stovepipe on it, and so the people would stand around there, you know, when it was cold and get warm.
Mm-hmm.
So they burned wood all over the project.
Well, after you worked on the, after the wood was, the brush was all cleared and the wood was cut, what job did you do next?
Well, after that tool house job, then I didn't have any work really right there then, and I kind of got caught up, so I went with the core drillers. They needed some help, and so someone asked if I wanted to go and work with this core driller. So there was two of us that went over across where the spillway is, and they had some core drilling to do by hand there. We just ran an auger, just a hand auger, and there was two of us running this auger, and we had pipe to put on. We had to go to shale.
But so it wasn't, how far down was that?
Oh, 15, 20 feet, 25 feet. It varied some, but that's about all the further we had to go. And then we had an inspector right with us and take samples of this dirt and make out his report and stuff. We did that for, quite some time. And, when we got through with that then, well, he wanted us, he asked if we wanted to come with him and stay with the core drilling. He said, you know, we had done a pretty good job, and the other fella said, yeah, I might as well. I don't have anything else in mind. And I said, oh, I better go back where I came from there because I know the fellas over there. And, you know, well, he was running a core drilling machine inside of a month's time, I think, and getting $1.20 an hour. I was getting 50 cents an hour, and I never did get to the $1.20. I had taken civil service exams for classified labor, for oiler, and for handyman. And classified labor ended up being a janitor. And I got called on that, and I worked up in the barracks. And after they got the barracks built, they built those barracks and a lot of the houses and stuff in 34. And so I don't know just when I went up there, but I got called up there as a janitor, and I worked there until in the summer of 36, I think it was. And I had this oiler's rating, which was 72 cents an hour. And I was getting $100 a month as a janitor. We got $1,200 a year. They took out 3.5%. You got paid once a month. And the hourly laborers got paid every 2 weeks. But the monthly men got paid once a month.
That doesn't sound like very much.
No, they took out 3.5% retirement is all that came out of that. But I was married by that time, had a family, and that was pretty rough going on $1,200 or $100 a month. Our boy got sick. When he was born, he had an allergy, I guess, and he just cried and cried and cried, and we couldn't figure out he couldn't drink milk is what the problem was, but we finally got that solved, you know, found out what was wrong, and we had to buy a special powdered milk for him. And that cost us about $30 a month. And we were having a pretty tough time making a go of it on those wages.
Now he owns the Jalco Agri Services, and so it didn't hurt him at all to...
No.
Get.
But I became head janitor up there in one of the blocks. That was a dignified position, I guess. I didn't have to make beds anymore. I had one guy working under me, but I still got $100 a month. I didn't get any more money. But then I went oiling, and of course I finished up as an oiler. Then I didn't. I tried to get on as an oiler on a drag line, And I couldn't make it. So I was an oiler, and we oiled, we greased the cats and the tracks and stuff, and we fueled them, and we fueled the drag lines. We did all the equipment down there off these trucks. It was a pretty tough job.
Why did you want to work on the drag line?
Because I could learn how to run one, and some of the fellows did, and some became operators before the project was over with, and I didn't make it. I didn't learn hardly anything. I learned how to run a cat, but I could have got just an ordinary cat without a blade on it or anything, or you'd get 80 cents. And I got to the point where I could have gotten on a cat, all right, but it was such a short time left that it wasn't worthwhile. And they thought if I stayed where I was at, I might have a permanent job, right there at Fort Peck as an oiler. this was a little bit comical. This was, it had to be in 39. I think I got laid off in 40, but it had to be, you know, later in the year in 39. And this foreman that I had said, oh, I'll see to it, John, that you get a permanent job here. I think I can. He said, I've been working on it, and I'll see that you get a permanent job, being as you were a local resident here. I wasn't a veteran, so I didn't stand much of a chance, you know, actually. But anyway, he had been telling me this right along. One morning he came to work, and he had kind of a funny look on his face. We had a little a building there that we...
Wait a minute. Okay, go ahead.
We had a building there where we kind of met, and we would all plan our strategy for the day. We had three oil trucks, and so that one truck would go here and another one there and so on. And sometimes this would change, and so we'd kind of get together with this foreman and decide where we were going to do, what we were going to do, and what equipment we would be involved in, you know, because they'd move them around here, there, and everywhere. So anyway, I came to work that morning, and I was already there, and there wasn't anyone else had come. I guess I'd got there a little early. Said, you know what happened this morning, John? And I said, no. He said, I'm going to get laid off. So there went my permanent job at Fort Peck.
Well, I have to stop because...